You know what a good reminder from Genesis chapter 1, verse 3 is? God always pierces the darkness. Always. And the darkness doesn't last.
And the high priest, the great high priest, who is Jesus Christ, he puts his hands on your life. And you take your hands off. And you say, my life is surrendered for your purposes.
Welcome, Rowdy, back to another episode of the Downline Podcast. My name is Jamie Truslove. The privilege of hosting this for Downline Ministries and serving as a lead pastor of Redeemer Dripping Springs in the Austin area. We hope this podcast helps you faithfully walk with Jesus while pouring your life into others. And today we are joined by Mark Vrogot, president of the Gospel Coalition, author, speaker, pastored a couple different churches. Mark, thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Yeah, Jamie, it's great to be with you today. Thanks for having me on your program.
I think several of our people will be familiar with you and your work, but maybe for those that aren't, could you give us a flyover of you and kind of the work we're going to talk about today, Dark Clouds, Deep Mercies, but then also kind of what you're up to in your current role as a Gospel Coalition?
Yeah, for sure. So married to my wife, Sarah, got four adult children, three sons that are married, five grandkids, and a Bernedoodle dog at our house.
Oh, my word.
We love to hang out, exercise, go camping together, and we just served in two churches over the last 30 years, one in Western Michigan, and most recently here in Indianapolis, where I'm still located. Was there at College Park Church in Indy for 17 years, and then took on the role of the president of the Gospel Coalition, a ministry that was very influential in my life and ministry, and one that I just believe deeply in my core really matters and is important. My journey in lament really happened in my first church with the stillbirth of a daughter between our third and fourth child, between our three sons and our now 20-year-old daughter, and began just sort of unpacking that in my own soul. And it wasn't until I got to College Park that I got clarity on some categories. And I also just got tired of telling people at the end of a service where I would unpack some of the darker psalms or some of the themes of lament that I really don't know what resource to point you to. So in 2014, set out on a journey to try and put some of that material in writing, which then became Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, which was published in 2019.
Well, you know, me along with, I'm sure, thousands and thousands of people are very thankful that you kind of heeded that call to write. You're very honest about your journey, even in the very beginning, and what you and your wife went through. And there are a couple of things you say at the beginning that jumped out to me that I'd love to unpack a little bit more. I think the first was you actually turned to the Bible to look kind of for a vocabulary or a language kind of for the pain you were experiencing and for what you and your wife were going through. And right, I'm assuming the Psalms of Lament and the Book of Lamentations itself maybe began to come home in some different ways, but can you kind of walk us through what it looks like to find biblical language for that kind of unspeakable pain you were going through?
Yeah, you know, I went to a good seminary and somehow I missed the whole category of lament. Like, I don't know how. I'm embarrassed. I mean, I have a master's in divinity and I just didn't understand it. Or I think what's true for many of us is we don't have ears to hear it until something happens and suddenly now we hear it differently. And that's sort of what happened to us. So we were just trying to process our pain with two things that were both true. We believed that God was good and he was sovereign. And our life was really hard. I mean, really hard. The stillbirth of our daughter, multiple miscarriages, a blighted ovum I talk about in the book, a false about pregnancy that we ended up catching the miscarriage before it happened. And then, you know, the pregnancy with my now living daughter, 9 months of just, you know, waiting for terrible news to happen.
That's right. Again. Yeah.
And so, you know, like so many of us, the Psalms were just so incredibly comforting. And then I began to understand why, that there's this category in the Psalms, really all the Bible, of lament, and began exploring it. And my story, I think, is the story that I've heard from many people who read Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, that when they understand the category of lament, they look back on their life and they realize, oh, that's what was going on. So for many of us, we don't set out to study lament. for most of us, lament finds us.
Yeah, it's
something happens. We're trying to figure it out. And lament is the language that we're just doing our best with to try and process our pain before the Lord.
Were there any particular things as you began to see that, and as you say, lament finds us, as it found you, and you're looking at the Psalms, looking at Lamentations, that you were surprised by as it relates to the Bible's vocabulary with lament?
Well, one, I was surprised with how surprised everybody is with lament. I mean, it's a third of the Psalms, for crying out loud. Mm. And I didn't know that at the time. And it was just remarkable to realize, no wonder we love the Psalms, because they're so real and earthy and really kind of gutsy. The other thing was, is I found words in the Lament Psalms that give voice to the things that hurting people really feel. They just don't know that they're allowed to talk to God about them. And in the Psalms in particular, we have inspired words that help us to know you can talk to God about your pain.
Yeah.
The other thing that was surprising is just the way that the language of lament speaks, not just to, in our case, like the grief of a stillborn baby, but the applications of lament are so broad because of the prevalence of pain, loss, and brokenness in the world. So for most of us, we kind of enter into lament through a door of the singular issue. And then it's like the whole forest opens up for us to realize, wow, there is a lot to explore here because the world is so incredibly broken.
Thanks for sharing that. That's very insightful. I've kind of find myself, so even when I read your work or talk to others, and you get a little bit of a spectrum of grief and pain. And well, maybe mine doesn't actually qualify for lament. I can clearly see how that person qualifies for lament. How do you, even pastorally, I find as people, myself included, I can put pain on a spectrum of comparison, right? And the more mine can be minimized, maybe less this lament stuff applies to me. How do you walk through that with people? And, you know, are there points and times where it's sort of like, hey, that's not real lament? Or if somebody's feeling pain, is it always lament? Like, can you be helpful there for us?
Yeah, so we'll start with a definition. I'd say that lament is a prayer in pain that leads to trust. So not every sad feeling that we have, not every struggle that we're wrestling through is biblical lament. Lament is a prayer language. It happens when we're in pain. It's meant to lead us, so it's process language, and the conclusion is trust. So we have to think of it that way, lest, you know, lament becomes like the junk drawer for all painful emotions. We don't want it to be that.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think there is a continuum, and I think that's appropriate in the same way that there are pains that have more shock value. They have more consequence to them. There are stories that are more gut-wrenching than others. So I do think there are different seasons, different kinds, different realities of lament, in the same way that there are different kinds of prayers, right? We have this ongoing, perhaps, conversation with the Lord. We have times of just utter desperation, times when we're crying out to Him. And so the level of intensity shouldn't be mistaken for the validity of lament in one case and not the other. In fact, I would argue that because one out of every three Psalms are laments, it would seem as though the Bible anticipates that we're going to have a lot of opportunity to use this language. And so I think most of us discover it because we've run into a really bad or hard situation that requires lament. Mm-hmm. But once you discover it, what I've found is that people begin applying lament in all kinds of spaces in their life. And so I think that lament has a legitimacy that spreads across the gamut of the different kinds of pain. But I do think there would be different levels of intensity depending upon the nature of the sorrow that the person's walking through.
Now, that makes total sense. So say someone comes in and, you know, they're processing lament. Is there ever a moment where there's a right or wrong way to do it, or maybe a better or worse or wiser or more foolish? As the Bible gives us language, are these categories, do I have to say these exact words for it to be lament? If we were really stepping into discipling someone who is going through some very legitimate pain, what are some initial faithful steps to do lament, maybe more faithfully than we might otherwise?
Sure. Well, one is just to realize that the 50 laments in the Psalms are all unique. And so one helpful thing to answer that question would be to read the laments and to realize how different each of those Psalms actually are. Now, laments typically involve four key ingredients. It involves a turning, a complaining, an asking, and a trusting.
Okay.
And those ingredients, again, turn, complain, ask, and trust, serve as kind of the framework for our construction, if you will, of a prayer of lament. But it's important to realize that some psalms put those ingredients in different orders. Like you may have a lament that starts with a proclamation of trust at the very beginning. So turning and trusting are going together, or the complaint and the turn happens immediately. Psalm 13 would be a good example of this. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Or there is this trust that keeps coming up in sort of a cyclical fashion. It's not just the destination, but it's hinted at or maybe even repeated. So Psalm 42 would be an example of where the psalmist is like, why so downcast, O my soul? Put your hope in God. Why so downcast, O my soul? Put your hope in God. But there's real struggle with that. So it's not just this one verse taken out of the context of some real real deep and difficult struggle. So can you lament the wrong way? Yeah, you can lament the wrong way by turning, complaining, and stopping. Tell God about your troubles and you don't get to ask and trust. So if you haven't gotten through all of four elements in some way, or at least to trust, you actually haven't lamented. So lamenting is not just telling God about your problems. Lamenting is talking to God about your problems so that you can end up trusting him fresh and anew. So one of the critiques that I've heard from time to time with my book is people would say, well, doesn't the Bible say we're to rejoice always? And it certainly does say that. And are you to rejoice always? Absolutely. The question I have is, how do you get there? And lament is the means that helps us get to the point where we can say, I will sing Psalm 13 because the Lord has dealt bountifully with me. That intentionality of trusting in the Lord's goodness through pain.
No, that's super helpful. I mean, Psalm 27 comes to mind when he says, I would have despaired if I didn't believe I'd see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living.
Right.
And we hold those things, not in tension in the sense that they're competitive with one another, but they both exist at the same time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing that lament does. It's a good point. If I could just double down on that, is it holds two things in tension, and it doesn't resolve them. And that's part of our problem with grief. We want it to resolve, and it doesn't always resolve. In fact, frequently it doesn't. And the way of embracing lament is just embracing that two things can be true at the same time. And I say this in the book, hard is not bad, Romans chapter 8, but hard is hard. Life is difficult, Psalm 13. So those two things can just coexist. But in our desire for control and the uncomfortability with grief and the reality of loss, we want to reconcile things that I think God intends for them to be left unreconciled. And lament is the language to help us not just reconcile that or realize that, but also to be able to live without full reconciliation in terms of how those things fit.
So if someone's walking through kind of those four components and you get to the trust piece and maybe they're going, I think I'm trusting God. I don't know if I'm trusting God. What I mean, does trust at that point look like? Does it look like perseverance? Does it look like endurance? Does it look like a point where you don't feel the grief as much anymore? I mean, I know you mentioned you keep carrying it in a lot of ways. Like at what point can someone kind of go, okay, I really feel like by God's kindness, I've made it to the trust component?
Yeah, I think it's important to think about trust as something that isn't an arrival or a finish line, but an ongoing renewing commitment.
Okay.
Because every day there's new struggles, and it's like, I'm going to keep trusting the Lord through this. And the intensity of that as one begins to heal through grief changes, but the reality of it doesn't. Maybe you have an illustration, you know, might be that, you know, I've been married to my wife now for 33 years, and I love her as much as I loved her the first day that we met and were married, but that love has taken on different texture and characteristics as we've grown together. And so it doesn't mean that it's any better or any worse. It's just different. And I think the same is true of what it means to trust. And, you know, some days you feel like I can barely breathe. So trusting is like literally walking out the door, going to work, or some cases, you know, going to church. Or I'm trusting today by even praying this lament prayer because I don't want to. Or it's an emotional sense of peace that God's really with me. Or it's a trust. Boy, even though I feel that God's absence, I know that he's absent. I know he's not. I'm going to trust that he's with me. So I think it's hard to pin down, because I think trust isn't, it's not linear. It's not an equation.
No, that's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. It's like in kingdom math, really just 2 + 2 = 4, right? It'd be great exactly. for it too. Okay. I did just want to take a quick moment and make a plea. And look, I'm the village idiot as it relates to algorithms and social media and how all these apps work. But I do know this: the more 5-star ratings and subscriptions we get, the more we're able to get this information out to those who might not otherwise come across it. So if you love the podcast, if God's using it in some way in your walk with Jesus, please, please, please take 5 seconds, follow it, give it 5 stars, and let's help create a movement of disciple makers. So what if we're in it? I've found this. I mean, you've been in pastoral ministry, you know, much longer than me. I'm only 20 years or so. But there almost is a sense of shame that can creep in for some Christians if all of a sudden lament undoes us a little bit. So we're not perfectly buttoned up anymore. Our faith may be shaken a little bit, the trust component. But we don't want to let that on. We certainly don't want anyone else to see that. Is there a component where if you're trying to lament alone, maybe lament's actually stunted?
It could be, for sure. Although I don't want to take away from the validity of solo lament, as though in order to do it real, you have to do it with other people. I think the problem that you're addressing is a little more foundational and has less to do with individual versus community. I think it has to do with our overall uncomfortability with lament or grief specifically, and the fact that even in our Christian circles, lament and grief is not historically viewed favorably. In fact, for most, I think people in their normal Christian experience, when something bad happens, they can tip towards, I talk about this in the book, to two ditches, the ditch of denial, the ditch of despair. So they just deny how hard it is because they think that real Christians just fake it. You know, they don't acknowledge the struggle of the soul, or they despair. They think, my goodness, if I'm struggling like this, I might not even be a Christian because I don't know anybody who wrestles like this. And then you go to Psalm 77 and you see these fastball questions about, has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he shut up his compassion? Has his promises come to an end for all time? And you're like, wow, that's blunt. I just don't know many people talk like that.
And in the Bible.
Hey, here we are, right? I mean, if some guy in a small group started praying like that, you know, the pastor would probably get a quick phone call. Hey, this guy's got bad theology. Well, no, he actually just read the Bible. He's prayed the Bible. So I just think we're uncomfortable, and that we can discuss why. I think one of the reasons why is we're just uncomfortable with sorrow and grief and loss. We don't like it. We want it to be over, understandably so. So we're super uncomfortable. We say too much. We shut people down. We're not candid about the struggles of our soul as it relates to grief. We'd rather go back to the triumphant, happy, everything's going to be okay life. And that's just not real.
It's not. And even if we were to drill down specifically into discipleship, as we're trying to either train others in the faith or we're being discipled ourselves, even to continue projecting a picture where lament and grief aren't real only kind of keeps reinforcing the same error, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yep.
You used a word and it's stuck with me. I was opening your book back up even today and seeing that I'd underlined it before. I thought it was an incredible word choice, but you mentioned that your grief was vicious. And I thought, I want to ask you, what does, like, you wrote it and I go, I do know what that feels like. I would have never picked the word, but what does vicious grief look like, sound like, as you're expressing that? And why pick that word?
It doesn't feel survivable.
Mm.
And it's frightening. Mm. I mean, literally, there were times I was like, I can't live like this. Mm. Like, and my wife can't live like this. And what if she's never happy again?
Mm-hmm.
What if I don't ever hear her laugh?
Mm.
I mean, so when I say vicious, I mean, it's, I remember having feelings, like physiological feelings, like I have never hurt this way. Mm. I've never had, or emotions that are this strong or this untamable. Mm. They just come out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's vicious in the sense that it's just relentless. It's it pops in moments that you're just like, seriously, I don't want to grieve right now and I can't stop it. And so it's just it's a fight, and it takes no prisoners, and it is no respecter of persons. Grief is a beast, man. It's not tame. It's vicious.
You mentioned even in the dedication to your book about your daughter, and that, you know, she taught you that hard is not bad, but hard is hard, which you mentioned earlier. As you walked through that season and have been out of that particular circumstance, I'm not going to say out of that season, I'm sure the grief, you continue to carry grief and trust along the way. What were some things that did keep you surviving? Was there you're still a dad, you're still a husband, there's still, your whole life doesn't stop in that moment. What, or do you look back now and say, man, God was infinitely gracious to me in some of these particular ways?
Yeah, he certainly was. You know, one thing that was super helpful was realizing that I needed to shorten my time horizon.
Okay.
So, you know, there's Matthew 6, Jesus says that we're not to worry about tomorrow because tomorrow has enough trouble of its own, which is kind of a funny thing to say. It doesn't feel super comforting. Don't worry about tomorrow. It's really bad. You know, so like, whoa, wait. But I think what he's saying there is there's a limit to every day's troubles.
Okay.
And every day's troubles are matched with every day's grace. Lamentations 3, steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Mercies are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. So, you know, on my really hard and dark days, I would just be like, I just have to do today. I just have to believe that God's going to give me grace for today. And you know what? He always did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go to bed exhausted, worn out, and like, okay, well, I'm going to go to bed, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to believe that tomorrow morning there's going to be fresh grace for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always true. Just in time delivery of God's grace. And there were other things that we learned along the way. I found that journaling became really helpful. Learned that there's nothing like a nice slow walk with my wife on a sunny day.
Mm-hmm.
I found that, you know, getting away, to a place in the woods, a campground, was uniquely mm-hmm. restorative to my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with a few friends, deeply meaningful. And then just the normal, you know, laughter and enjoyment of our kids being kids was really healing. So there were a number of things that all kind of went into God's provision of his grace. I'd be reading the scriptures and I'm just like, I've never seen this here before. I've known this has been in my life. My Bible's been in front of me. I've read this verse, I don't know how many times, but it hit me differently. And it was like the Lord just, you know, provided manna from heaven in that particular moment.
I know. Thanks for kind of being willing to dive into that for us. I have several friends I know that are even listening to this podcast amongst, you know, the couple thousand folks that are going through stuff with kids, either going through stuff with marriage. And it's not the loss of, you know, a death, but there's a loss of relationship. There's a loss of hopes, loss of dreams, and all these things. So you sharing candidly is, I know, such a blessing for so many people. Let me ask you this. I know your time at College Park, you know, you worked through Psalms and Job and Lamentations. From the pastoral component and the leadership component, were there some things you could put into practice that people can adopt into their lives to maybe make this a little more I don't want to say normal as in, it's a special category, right? Pain and grief. We don't want to treat it like it's anything else, but also we don't want it to be so alien that we never do it biblically. So were there some steps and intentional things we could use and already start incorporating them before kind of the big moment finds us?
Sure. So one thing is I just started acknowledging that within the room on Sunday morning, there are a bunch of people who are really glad to be there. And there were a number of people who barely got there.
Okay.
And just so that the griever felt like, okay, this is the place for me, as opposed to everyone's got to be, you know, triumphant, victorious, everything's great, Jesus is coming again, we're going to win. All of that's true. But sometimes when you've been walking through a really, really hard time, it's hard to catch that enthusiasm. Yeah. And that enthusiasm can actually feel really, really painful.
Yeah.
Another thing was we began incorporating aspects of lament into our pastoral prayers so that it didn't become this language that was kind of put on the shelf and then sort of pulled out only in moments of tragedy.
Yeah.
So started modeling it a little more. After I wrote the book and then, 2020 happened with COVID, it was pretty interesting to see a number of songwriters kind of stepped into the space, which I was super grateful for, both in our church and nationally, globally. And was really thankful that, I don't know, our congregational singing, there are at least options now to maybe sing songs that have more of a minor key. Now, none of them, were going to make the top CCLI charts ever. Right. But at least we had them, And so that was great.
Somebody's out there, maybe they're meeting with somebody, they've got a friend in some real despair and some real grief. Do they just charge in with the lament psalms? Can you help them take a first step into ministering to someone, coming alongside someone that maybe isn't familiar with lament and what God has for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you do have to be really careful. Somebody who's grieving needs to first know that they're loved and you're there. They don't need you to solve their problem. They need a friend to sit with them.
Yep.
So the best thing that you can do is just to be present, to communicate how sorry you are, reaffirm your love, and even just to say to them, I don't know what to do. I just want you to know I'm just really sorry and I'm here. Eventually, there may be an opportunity for that prayer language of lament to come up. Ideally, I think John Piper says, the time to prepare your people for suffering is before they suffer. So ideally, the time to prepare for lament is before that, because it's hard to teach somebody how to grieve when they're grieving.
Okay.
But it could be something where someone, says, hey, I was reading this psalm. It just spoke to me, and it's one of the lament psalms, and can I just read it to you? Just kind of opening the door to that and see if that would be helpful. But you can't force someone to lament. They have to be brought there on their own. I don't recommend that people bring my book to the hospital
and hand it out
right after a tragedy. Like, hey, here, read this. Like, there may be a time to be able to give that book. I'm almost sure it's not within the first 48 hours.
Okay.
So I think just being present is more important than teaching people how to grieve.
You mentioned at the end of your book, kind of that final chapter you tie a bow in, just kind of pointing us towards the journey ahead, right? For all of us in a world that isn't quite yet what God is going to remake it to be. What is that journey ahead?
Yeah, I mean, that journey ahead is there's going to come a day when we won't need to lament anymore.
Amen.
Oh, man.
That's right.
You know, I don't know what psalms we're going to read in the new heavens and the new earth, but we won't be reading a third of the Psalter. It's going to be a great day. But until then, man, life's filled with lots of brokenness, lots of pain. And, I say to college students, if you haven't suffered, you just haven't lived long enough yet. It's going to come. And I don't mean to be, sour or that, dark old man who's got a, dim view of life, but life is hard. And so the hopeful thing is, though, that lament is our song for that somewhat hard, often bumpy pilgrimage. Mm. And God gives it as a means to help us to stay connected to Him when we're just really sad and really hurt because of the effects of sin in the world.
Last question. I'm so thankful for your time. I told you 30 minutes. So I'm going to try to be faithful to that. Is it possible for in our grief and pain and in our own lamenting, are there things we shouldn't say to God? And I only phrase that because I've heard, you know, plenty of times in 20 years, hey, God's a big boy. He can handle your pain and handle your emotion. And I get the sentiment there, but is there a proper or less proper way? Or I think it's helpful for people to know, like, can I just go say anything and it's fine? What would you say to that kind of mentality? Well, hey, Downline, Jamie Trussell here, pausing this episode because I wanted to make you aware of one resource. Yes, it's a little self-serving because I want to feed my kids, but if you are battling depression or discipling someone who is battling depression and you're looking for a very baseline piece of equipping that will offer some hope and some insight, I do want to recommend a book I was privileged to write called From Couch to Couch. You can get it at Westbow Press or on Amazon. And its goal was really to equip people to serve as a ministry of presence and to offer hope to those battling depression. Again, I hope through the power of the Spirit and just the kindness of the Lord that it could be a resource that really serves His church and His people.
Yeah. It's a great question. To be clear, I think it's a sin to be angry with God. Mm. And I think you could sin and put it under the context of you're trying to lament. So I think it's important that we are understanding who we're addressing. God doesn't owe me a pain-free life. He doesn't owe me explanations. He doesn't owe me deliverance from the sorrow that I'm facing. Laments identify the struggle. They lay out, God, this is hard. I'm wrestling with this. They're not designed to make accusations that impugn God's character.
That's
or
really good.
Treat Him in a way that He owes you a better life. So I think there's a fine line there, and everyone has to wrestle with what that is. So I don't think lament gives you just a permission to say whatever you want to a holy God whose purposes are far beyond anything we could ever ask or dream. So there, but when you come with the right heart, a humble posture, a sense of God, I know I can trust you, but this is hard. Laments are the language for those kinds of conversations with the Lord.
Well, Mark, this has been super encouraging and helpful for me. I know it has been for our audience, and thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
We thank you for listening to this episode of the Downline Podcast. Please subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Help us to get this content out to as many people as possible as we continue to partner with men and women in the Great Commission as we seek to make disciples as a lifestyle for a lifetime.